Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we're joined by Nathan Ott, pharmacy manager at Food City in Dalton, Georgia. He's here to discuss with us the key role pharmacists play in boosting immunization rates across the country in celebration of World Immunization Week, powered by the World Health Organization and celebrated this year from April 24th to 30th. So Nathan, to start us off today, pharmacists have noticeably stepped up in the immunization space since the COVID-19 pandemic, now establishing them as some of the most well-positioned providers to offer vaccines. Has this pharmacist role increased even more in recent history, or has the immunization space evolved in other ways or other directions?
Well, while we did see a dramatic and successful surge in the pharmacist-administered immunizations during the COVID-19 pandemic, I believe the most dramatic increase actually happened quite a bit earlier. 30 years ago, pharmacist vaccination was basically non-existent. Washington State was the first to allow pharmacist vaccine administration in 1994, with other states trickling in behind every year. Here in Georgia, we first received legal authorization in 2008. By 2010, 91% of pharmacy schools included the APHA immunization training program in their curriculum. Pharmacist training, pharmacy immunization programs, collaborative practice agreements have continued to build each year after that, especially in the decade before the pandemic. By the time COVID-19 came, we were really ready to step up to the plate. I really think we should applaud the diligent work of our previous generation of pioneers, university professors, state lobbyists who laid the groundwork for the successful pandemic response. Since the pandemic, our authority has broadened to include dozens of vaccines in most states. We've even seen the rise in technician-administered vaccination, which really helps to allow pharmacists to step back and manage much larger clinics. And I think while these are pretty significant bumps, the zero to pandemic in 12 years, I think that's probably our biggest.
Awesome. Perfectly said. Yeah, I love the perspective. Going back, the main thing I thought of is like how other spaces like pharmacists prescribing oral contraceptives, things that of that sort, getting up to speed now, and those are becoming prominent in the pharmacy space. But like you said, immunizations is nothing new, even way before the COVID pandemic. And you definitely see that in the pharmacy space. So I really appreciate that. So kind of going to the access point of pharmacies, how can pharmacies leverage their position as one of the most accessible points of healthcare contact to improve community immunization rates? Like, what's their place like specifically in the community?
Well, patients see pharmacists twice as often as their physicians, so we have many more opportunities to encourage immunization. We also offer convenience, as many pharmacies offer walk-up services with no appointment. Since they're coming to us anyway, our biggest hurdle is often identifying eligible patients. The easiest way I have experienced is the incorporation of the eligibility check into our workflow. At my company, our software automatically links to the state immunization database and notifies us if a patient is due for a vaccine. We then, because that's part of our workflow, we can mark their order and discuss that during patient counseling at the end. We also encourage our staff to ask patients at drop-off and pickup if they're interested in a flu vaccine throughout the fall and winter months. This helps to open the door for other discussions about vaccines if the patient shows some interest. And I think finally, thankfully, insurance companies have also really helped by providing a reasonable reimbursement for most vaccine administrations. Beyond the dispensing fee, we usually get compensated for that extra time and expertise required for administration. So in the current climate of the negative reimbursements, such as the $200 losses that we see daily with GLP-1s, pharmacists that aren't providing immunization services run a very high risk of going into the red.
Awesome. Yeah, very well said. I think your response highlights not only like your pharmacy's role, but also just the pharmacist's role in general, their ability to reach patients, have those important conversations, also use technology and kind of use what pharmacy's given, especially like you said, in this shaky kind of space with reimbursement. So yeah, I really appreciate that. I want to move into education a little bit and then talk about some current ongoing developments and then let you wrap this up. But what role does ongoing pharmacist education, whether it's for the pharmacists themselves or importantly, the patients that they serve. What role does education play in staying current with vaccine recommendations and effectively guiding patients?
The rapid changes in vaccine approvals and changes in recommendations present significant challenges for especially to retail pharmacists. We're very busy and we don't often have time to stay up to date. CE can be one of the many useful tools that we use to stay up to date. Many states require immunization-specific continuing education to maintain vaccination authority. I think it's a good idea for all immunizers to incorporate at least one such CE into license renewal every couple of years, really whether required to or not, just to reinforce up-to-date knowledge and reduce errors. The Georgia Registry of Immunization Transactions and Services, they really wanted that acronym to be GRITS. It's hilarious. That is one of our most important tools here in the state of Georgia, as it not only tracks each vaccination given within the state, but it also tells us where there might be gaps in patient vaccinations compared to current recommendations. Most states now have a similar immunization tracking registry the pharmacists can easily access. Now, records there are sometimes incomplete, but the registries can help us to generate those conversations with specific patients that are most likely to need a vaccine. I've also found the Pneumorex Vax Advisor app, which is posted on the CDC website, to be very helpful in navigating the confusing pneumonia vaccines. We've seen to get a new pneumonia vaccine about every year or two. So with those rapid approvals, every time it has new changes in who is due for what and when. That app can help to clear up some of that confusion with just three quick questions. Of course, you know, regularly following a pharmacy news publication such as Drug Topics can also really help pharmacists to stay current with all those latest developments.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that last point. But no, yeah, I appreciate it. I think you touched on all the importance of from CE to getting hooked up with your state. Obviously, that's just as important, if not more important, to understand what each pharmacist can do within their respective state. So cool. Kind of wanted to talk about a little bit more of the current events in this space. So can you speak to some of the ongoing developments in the vaccination space that have stemmed from the current presidential administration and federal health agencies? And just what are your perspectives on these developments? Obviously, it's not, there's some novel things going on. I just wanted to like get your understanding of how you could see it from a pharmacist's lens.
Sure. Three main news items come to mind. The new administration drew a lot of attention by replacing all 17 members of the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, the ACIP, in 2025. In January, the CDC made news by restructuring the vaccine schedules and recommendations into three categories: the high risk, routine, and shared clinical decision making. They've then reduced the childhood routine vaccines from 13 to 7, and the diseases with those universal recommendations from 17 to 11. In March, just here recently, we also had a federal ruling in American Academy of Pediatrics v. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. that voided all of the changes made since the new ACIP members were appointed, halting implementation nationwide. As for my perspective, I'm not a lawyer, but this current ruling looks a lot like judicial policymaking. While it is being framed as a procedural, the court does not really specifically identify statutes violated. The case is instead built on unidentified standards, inferred requirements, and its own definitions of expertise, balance, and adequate reasoning. I believe this ruling probably will only be temporary and overturned on appeal. So it's not something that's going to stick around permanently. This ruling also looks like what's become the norm, unfortunately, over the last several years, especially since the pandemic, with vaccines and public health becoming highly politicized. Many people moved into polarized camps and adopted all or nothing attitudes towards vaccines as a result. Some examples of issues that have fueled that fire include the demonization of hydroxychloroquine by since retracted Lancet study in May of 2020, flip-flopping mask mandates, the overturned OSHA COVID vaccine mandate, and broader successful mandates in other countries, closing the schools, censoring of dissenting views by media and social media, and the push to COVID vaccinate ever younger children despite low disease risk. All of this together created a lot of public distrust. People started asking questions and looking for motives beyond scientific reason to explain why some of these decisions were being made. This, unfortunately, fueled a lot of conspiracy theories, ultimately causing backlash against vaccines. When that backlash occurred in higher risk populations, it likely cost the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. So, in my opinion, replacing ACIP members with experts maybe less tied to industry, I think that probably could help rebuild some of the credibility by reducing the perception of perceived conflicts of interests and rubber stamp approvals. The new CDC recommendations that we've seen, they do still allow patients to access any vaccine, but they've much more limited the government authority to mandate those non-routine ones, especially at the school board level. Overall, the new guidelines really bring us, as the U.S., more in line with a lot of other developed nations. So, like some other revisions that they've made, like reducing HPV doses, that aligns with global findings that simpler schedules boost vaccine intake. So others, such as downgrading the flu and COVID vaccines for children, these reflect lower mortality rates in those groups. And while I plan to still vaccinate my kids for flu, I understand the move towards more individualized, evidence-based decisions. Ultimately, returning medicine to data-driven, risk-benefit reasoning, free from politics or financial influence, is really what's needed to restore public trust.
I think you could not have said that any better, laying really what's going on and touching on everything. And I think it's great that you started with the kind of the removal of the ACIP members and ended with that, because even though it's almost been a year since it's happened, it really is like the catalyst and kind of all this confusion and this kind of domino effect that has been caused since. So I really appreciate that. Obviously, it's along with all the immunization things and pharmacists' abilities and capabilities, like this is just another thing that pharmacists need to really be paying attention to. I think that was perfectly said. So going to the greater healthcare arena, where pharmacists, where everyone can move forward. For my last question, I really appreciate you joining. It's been a great conversation. In what ways can pharmacists collaborate with physicians, public health agencies, community organizations, or anyone else in this space to build stronger vaccination awareness campaigns, and how important are these connections?
Community connections can lead to vaccine clinics, which, in my opinion, those are the best ways to push awareness. Health departments tend to do a significant number of community clinics, and they may be able to help point you towards potential opportunities to get involved. Many employers are often receptive to the idea of hosting vaccine clinics on site if you can contact the right person, usually in the human resources department. Getting these contacts, this can often start by just getting to know your patients. Where do they work? Does their employer currently hold a flu shot clinic? And who can we contact to set one up? Collaboration with physicians and public health can also help to solve one of the most challenging issues in vaccination inventory management. In our community, most physicians only order a handful of flu vaccines each year, and they rarely stock shingles, pneumonia, or COVID vaccines just because of the high cost and the high likelihood that many of those will go out of date. Health departments, on the other hand, usually stock everything, including less commonly used vaccines, such as those administered before overseas travel. Their big issue, though, is inconvenience involved in making that extra stop or traveling to another town over to go to the health department. So collaboration can really help everyone to know who stocks what and how patients can most easily get their vaccines. Doctors around here will often forward shingles, pneumonia, and COVID vaccinations to pharmacists, and everyone forwards rare vaccine needs to the health departments, and less vaccines go out of date in the back of the fridge as a result. These professional interactions, they're crucial, because they can also help pharmacies to attain collaborative practice agreements with physicians. And most of the states legally require that in order to have prescribing authority. So I've found collaboration and vaccine clinics lead to increased vaccination awareness, goodwill in the community, new patients for your pharmacies, and even increased revenue.
Awesome. Perfectly said. That's all I got for you. I really appreciate it, Nathan.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.